Jim, do you mind if we smoke, or do you want none of that as well?
You do what you want. I just don't want.
Yeah.
Cool. Do what you want.
I love doing what I want. I love you, Jim, for that.
All right, bring us in, Mike.
Goddamn, we need a fan in here, though. Float out of here.
No, man, come on. You guys are crazy.
Let's go.
Listen free to Hot Boxing, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. If you love the show, share it with a friend, and don't forget to leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. Okay, this is another episode of Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson.
I'm Evan Britton.
And we have a real awesome guest here today, my buddy, you know what I mean, sportscaster, extraordinaire, the great Hall of Famer, Jim Gray.
What's up, Mike? Been a long time with Mike. Man. We've been together a long time.
That's right, man.
Great to be here with you.
You guys have known each other a long time.
Yeah.
I know Mike since he was 16. How old are you now?
I'm 52.
That's a lot of years.
Yeah.
That's a lot of years. We're coming up on 36 years.
Oh, God.
Wow. Think about that.
That was it's crazy. We still alive.
Remember when I met you?
When? What day was that?
Tell us.
I met you. You were training in the Catskills. I met you, and then we had our first interview back then. But we then had our first real long conversation. You were maybe 19 or 20. You came into Mateo's restaurant.
Yeah, I remember that.
I think
that
you were
fun.
With Jimmy Jacobs, and by accident, Don King was there.
Yeah, that was. I remember Mateo was the best.
Oh, in Westwood.
Yeah, it was the best.
Remember Maddie?
Yeah. I remember him. Oh, man. He would come by, introduce me to people and stuff.
Everybody was in there. It used to be a restaurant on Sunday nights. And
I'll tell him about this.
Diego, oh, my Belize. God. Everybody. Sinatra was in there. Lucille Ball. Sammy Davis.
Wow. Anybody.
Dean Martin,
Bob Hope.
Bob Hope.
Anybody sitting there.
Al
right?
Davis.
It's chilling out, right?
It was incredible. It was fun.
This is Westwood in L.A.?
Yeah, now Davis
it's still there. It's still there. It's on Westwood and Pico.
Yeah, still there.
Still there.
Wow, dude.
It's changed hands. Maddie died, and his wife, Jackie, she sold it. And but
it's
was
not the same. No, it's
not the same, but the booths are still the same. They had that train up there. Yeah, I remember you were watching that train. Remember that train was going around?
Yeah, on the ceiling.
Yeah, and they had a Cleveland Browns car because Art Modell was the owner of the Browns, and he used to be in there all the time. So they added a car, the Cleveland Browns, that car on the train set.
That was just an awesome place to be. That was just really at that time of my life, just going in there and seeing everybody, Barbra Streisand, and seeing everybody, you're like, wow, since you're a kid, you watch these guys on these late night television, Flip Wilson, all these guys, you're like, whoa, this is a trip.
They were all in there. Johnny Carson. It was something. It was special.
That's pretty special.
But anyway, we had our first real conversation there. He sat down at the table. He was looking at the train. The train was going round and round, and I said, hey, Mike, and he had seen me on television, obviously, and I had interviewed him, sat down, and we had a conversation. I was with my dad and then Mike. So Mike was maybe 19 or 20, not sure exactly. But every time I saw Mike after that, until my dad died about 5 or 6 years ago, every time I saw him, the first thing come out of Mike's mouth, it didn't matter where we were, what fight we were doing, whether it was Manchester or the MGM or anything, first thing he would say when he saw me, how's your dad, Jerry?
I met Jim, but what I always knew that for my brother, his father was just the man. You know what I mean? All your father's associates and everything, Marvin Davis and all those guys, you know. Your father was just the man, you know. And everybody always told me about your father. He was the man. Don King was saying he was the man. Everybody just had great reverence for your father.
Well, he was a great man. He really was. And he helped a lot of people, and
tell us about him. Come on.
Yeah. He gave me my love of sports. And
where he grew up at? Where was he born?
He grew up in Denver.
Yeah.
And he stayed in Denver his whole life. And he would travel around and do his work. But, you know, he raised us in Denver. And my brothers were older than me. So I got to spend a lot of time with my dad because my brothers were out of the house by the time I was, you know, old enough to, you know, really be able to do things and so forth. So we went to Bronco games and Rockets and Nuggets games, and he would take me down to the Golden Gloves. Golden Gloves was big in Denver, and every Christmas, my dad loved boxing. My dad used to go to all the fights, and he would drive us by Sonny Liston's house.
Yeah.
Sonny Liston lived on Monaco Avenue, not far from where we lived and grew up, and so we would go every Christmas, go to see his lights and hope to see him standing outside He lived by Stapleton Airport, which was the old airport in Denver. And we would go down there and look at that. And he would take me to watch Ron Lyle spar or Ron Lyle's fights. And he just loved it. And we would watch the fights on television, black and white, and Bob Dunphy and Howard Cosell. And so, you know, I was just exposed to it at a young age. You know, all those great, great fighters. And Denver was, you know, Denver had a big boxing community. So, you know, I kind of fell in love with it, and it just brought me closer to my dad, not necessarily boxing, but just all the sports that, and I was a tennis player, so he would come to my matches and my mom, and, you know, he just gave me the ability to do what I wanted to do and the freedom without interference, but the guidance and the love, you know, that's required to have a successful life. And so without that, you know, without pressing you or pushing you into what to do, he always just told me, you know, whatever you do, work hard and do it with integrity. And you know, we miss him. He was my best friend. It's a tough, you know, everybody goes through it. Everybody loses loved ones. And then when it happens to you, you lose your best friends and you've lost a tremendous amount of people in your life, you know that they're irreplaceable. You look for it in other people, but there isn't another father and there isn't another best friend and there isn't people who are in your circle that you really trust that you can find it from. Even though you try to gravitate to those people who you think might, it's just not the same. So was lucky to have had him for the first, 54 years of my life. And my mom is still alive, and she's great. So the good news is when I see my mom, I feel my dad. And she's still in Denver and rolling strong. And
so tell me, what do you think?
You met her. You've been around her.
I want to know about more, but what do you think made your father so influential?
His honesty, his integrity, his principles. You know, he grew up in a time, you know, where, you know, people didn't have much. So they helped each other. And he saw, you know, what his grandfather did in the community to help others who had come over from Europe, who you know, and then my dad was a naval reserve for the war. And so, you know, they knew that the times, you know, required that you had to figure out how to help others who didn't have what you had. So my grandfather, was my great-grandfather, his grandfather, used to always tell him, Jerry, if you make a dime, you give someone a penny. If you make a dollar, you give someone 10 cents. If you make more than $100, you better give somebody more than $10. So he figured out, you know, that it was if you ever became successful, that you had an obligation, that there was a requirement morally to do whatever you could to help others. So my dad was a very philanthropic man. He got involved in all kinds of charities.
I didn't even meet his friend.
How did he meet his friends?
Yeah, all those guys, Marvin Davis and all those guys.
Well, my dad was an accountant.
By trade, that's what he did?
Yeah, he had a certified public accounting
But being an accountant, just being an accountant, you know, you get to know so many people. Yeah.
Well, he ended up doing the taxes for a lot of people in Colorado. And so, you know, he became trusted that, you know, he would handle people's circumstances in their accounting and you know, figuring out ways how they could finance and do things and you know, being responsible to paying the government and also, you know, being able to fund some of the other stuff. So he was just trusted. How do you gain trust? Why do you trust me? It's just something you can't really put your finger on. You just know it.
Our experience together.
Correct.
So I would know that I was a scumbag because all in the journeys of where we traveled, so we met a lot of bad people. So it would be easy for me to identify you as a bad person.
Right. So that experience that he had with others led them to be able to know that he could facilitate a relationship and be counted on and be trusted. And he
really, that must have been powerful stuff.
He really was. He really was. And, you know, he was proud of all the things that he was able to accomplish, not only in business, but he was very proud of all the people that he helped who couldn't help themselves. Whether it was guys who were nameless, you know, and done anonymously, which he did a tremendous amount of people for people who, you know, no one, not his friends, not even his family. I mean, I had a guy come up to me at his funeral, and he said to me, "Do you have a moment?" And I was just, we were just walking out of the funeral, and he said, "Can I talk to you for a moment? I want to tell you something about your dad that you don't know." And I'm thinking, what the fuck? This guy going to tell me I got a brother or something? I said, I don't need another brother that I don't know. I'm thinking, this goddamn guy, why are you going to tell me something about my dad that I don't know right now? And so I kind of looked at him, and I kind of kept walking. He said, no, it's important. And I'm thinking, oh, God, my heart, you know how your heart kind of sinks? You ever had somebody come up to
you? Absolutely.
And you're thinking, oh, God damn,
yeah,
no.
When they serve you with some papers.
So he said to me, you know, your dad was involved in something called the Bridge Foundation at the University of Denver. I said, yeah. He said, he's a trustee, and he helped create the whole thing. And he said, yeah. And he said, there's tens of thousands of students who've been educated because of your dad's help, and they're all living much better lives because of what he was able to do and how he was able to help them all. And what the program was is, if you could not afford college and you came from, I believe it was Denver Public Schools, and you couldn't afford it, he would bridge the gap. In other words, if you needed $100 more, he'd give you $100. If you needed $1,000, he'd give you $1,000. They created this whole foundation to bridge the gap of what people could afford and what they couldn't afford so that they could then be educated. And so he changed the lives of, you know, thousands of kids and the community, and he left a part of himself to be able to help others for future generations. So, you know, it's mind-boggling, you know, and that's that he amazing. Had the time and the inclination and the willingness to do that and all the other things that he did. But that one, I walked away from that guy, and I felt great, but I wanted to smack him at first.
How do you live up to something like that?
You can't.
Yeah, how do you
can't, but it's a great example, and you just...
That's what you hope to do in life.
He always used to say to me, if you can help somebody, help them. If you can't, you hope they understand. Hmm. So you try to do the best you can, and, you know, as a great role model, it's hard to... You can't fill those shoes. Nobody can. But you can try and do your best, and... the great example that he and my mom have set, and just the honesty and decency and integrity. And I'm glad you got to know him a little bit. And what you said to me at the Hall of Fame again last year, you know, that made me cry before we started, when you started to cry. That was, I wasn't expecting that. But I can't tell you how much that meant to me, because you could go to a place that I wasn't going to go, you know. I wasn't going to take the people there, and he did. That was a great moment.
Thank you, brother. You know, it's going with this journey in life with you. You know what I mean? Knowing you as a human being, a person, knowing what you experienced with, you know, just bullshit from people, from shit with me and shit with Pete Rose and all that shit. And the only thing that I realized you experienced what I experienced, we never gave up. No matter what anybody said to us, they tried to break our spirits, you know, destroy how we felt about ourselves, our confidence. You just never gave up in life like that.
You know, I was kind of fortunate just in my own brain to think that, you know, when people have opinions, they're entitled to their opinions. And if we're going to dish it out, we should be able to take it. So... when people give you a hard time, even when they don't have all the facts, you got to correct the facts, but opinions are okay. Everybody has an opinion, and that opinion, even if you disagree with it, doesn't mean that they can't have it, but it doesn't mean that you have to believe it. So who am I going to believe? Some guy who doesn't know me? Some guy who for whatever the reason, has venom or anger or jealous or petty? Or, and by the way, sometimes the criticism's correct, and when the criticism's correct, you got to do your best to take it to heart and change. I mean, if somebody says something about you and you know it's true, don't fight it, fix it. Right?
100%.
Yeah.
So sometimes you just have to fix it. Sometimes you got to take your medicine when you're wrong, And when you're not wrong, well, I just disregard it, because what does it matter what they think? Yeah. Does it matter to you what somebody thinks that doesn't know you?
No, not at all.
It matters to me when my wife's mad at me. It matters to me when you're mad at me. It matters to me when people who know me and care about me, when they're pissed off, I better look at myself and get it right. Otherwise, oh well. You know?
Hey, what do you think about this? You know, well, he didn't think that. I was speaking earlier. I took this ancient drug, the TMD. Explain to Jim what
DMT.
DMT. 5-DMT.
5-MEO.
5-MEO DMT.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It's a hallucinogenic, so to speak, isn't it?
Yeah, it's this entheogenic. So it helps people dealing with depression, anxiety, addiction, cancer. You experience an ego death.
Is it legal?
It's legal in ceremonial medicinal settings, and you can go to
Mexico. Legal in the United States?
I don't know. Maybe not. Depends if it's an Indian reservation or something to that effect.
Okay, so where are we going with this? What's this got to do with it?
Listen, this is going to be so interesting. That's why I'm saying this. I experienced with this, how do we call it? What do we call it? This ancient
medicine.
Medicine. And man, and so I'm thinking about doing this, because I'm not worrying about doing drugs. The guy explained this is a magic drug. It's a God molecule and stuff. And I'm saying, oh, really? I'm high on cocaine. So yeah, let me see what you got, okay? Let me see what the fuck you got. Okay? So I go in the back. The guy said, not now. Let's finish the conversation, because I'm interviewing him. So he's talking about this stuff. I said, I can't wait. You're so full of shit. I'm telling you, you can't do this. And so I go in there, right? And I smoked, and man, I said, I'm dead. Holy shit. The first thing I said, I'm dead. These people killed me. Holy shit.
Where is this? What country?
It's close by. It's close by, right?
This guy, Dr. Jerry, comes from Mexico. He's a shaman. He's performed thousands of these ceremonies.
And
sorry,
Mike, go ahead. Don't worry about it. And then, I see you won't believe this. You got to see this.
I've been everywhere with you. I'm not going to not believe anything, because I've seen it all. Every time all I said sudden, I can't I believe took, it, I've been with
drug,
Mike.
Yeah. Okay. I took this drug. I disintegrated. I have no longer a physical being. I'm just all spiritual being. There's nothing physical about me, and I'm just gone. And I'm dying, and it's over. Everything is marginalized. I'm happy with that. No one's in my life.
No wonder you got all these millions of people watching this.
No,
this is some crazy shit.
See, okay. I know. So I said, so
what's the question?
All of a sudden, I asked God, I want power. I want power, and all of a sudden, I disintegrated.
It must have been a hell of a trip.
Oh man.
Well, Mike has really. It seems like
my first trip. I did it 5 times.
Mike has been released.
Slow down, buddy.
No way,
slow
man.
Down, buddy. Tell you,
no
Jim,
way, Jim. No way. I'm seeing. I'm experiencing
Jim, this guy
God.
Is so
I'm
much lighter.
God.
When I first met this guy 6 months ago, he was doing well, but he had a lot on him. You know, obviously, he's been through hell and back.
Well, when you alter all these chemicals in your brain and you start taking this stuff,
yeah,
well, this
I agree.
You're going to be a little lighter.
Yes, this is crazy.
Be careful.
No,
watch out what you're doing.
I'm not afraid.
Okay,
absolutely
I'm not afraid.
All right,
death is not even an existence.
You know? I don't even know how to respond to that. So,
well,
let's go on to the next one.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Mike.
What's up, Evan?
Man, I'm just feeling really overwhelmed right now, dude. I've hit a wall. I don't know. I'm a little angry.
Listen, Evan, I wish I could help you, but I'm not a trained therapist.
I know, but you always give such great advice.
I appreciate that, but I think you should check out Talkspace.
Talkspace?
Talkspace is the online therapy that makes it easy to talk about your life, deal with your stress, and achieve your goals.
And they have real therapists?
Over 5,000 licensed and trained therapists that can help you with your depression, your addiction, your stress, your relationship, and more.
And I do this all from the privacy of my phone or computer?
Absolutely.
That's awesome, because stigma about mental health keeps many people, especially men, from speaking up. But with Talkspace, you don't have to worry about it.
Whether you're training for a marathon or trying to get a new job, achieving goals, start with a strong mind. And Talkspace Online Therapy is there to help you.
But I can still call and talk to you, right, Mike? Mike? Huh. Must have gotten disconnected. Anyway, the bottom line is that we could all benefit from therapy. Talkspace wants to give more of us a chance to achieve our goals and feel our best at a price we can afford. As a listener of Hotboxin', you can get $100 off your first month on Talkspace to match with your perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy. Go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure to use the code Tyson to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Tyson and Talkspace.com.
As we head into the back half of the NFL season, it's always a bittersweet moment. It's hard to believe half the season's over.
But the good news is there is even better football on the horizon. The NFL playoff push, college football playoff arguments, and soon enough, bowl season.
So if you're looking to get excited, make BetDSI.com your betting partner.
That's right, Mike. And it couldn't be any easier because new members at BetDSI get 100% bonus match using promo code Tyson101.
Whoa, that's pretty awesome, man. You can use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash.
And who couldn't use a little extra cash? Make a little bread while watching TV. They have the fastest payouts in the industry. Simply play, win, and get paid.
Wow. New members get 100% bonus match using promo code Tyson101. That's double your money to start winning today.
Once again, go to BetDSI.com and use promo code Tyson101 and get this limited time 100% bonus offer to get yourself paid.
It's only a game until you bet it. BetDSI.
Jim, you've interviewed this guy a lot,
yep.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Is it funny to be on the other side of the mic?
No. I did a podcast with him a year or two ago.
Oh, Bite the Mic?
Yeah.
Yeah,
nice.
I did that one. And, you know, we've hung out together in you know, just where, you know, we just shared life's experiences.
We've been all over the world together.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we have a relationship. Yeah. We have a friendship. I trust Mike. And like I said at the Hall of Fame last year, without Mike, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today. He's been an important part of my career. He's trusted me. And in many ways, standing next to Mike, you know, along with others along the way, you know, made me famous, if that's the right word. You know,
you really are famous, Jim Gray.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't like that word, but because of all of the attention that Mike attracted and all of his fame, when you're standing next to him and he's doing all this stuff and he's, you know, said his back is broken and he's bitten some guy's ear off and he's won championships and he's the youngest heavyweight ever. It's not just the crazy stuff, but it's the immortal stuff for boxing and for sports that he accomplished, you know. You get the benefit of that. You derive all of the accolades that he is accepting because you're standing there next to him talking. So you get a lot of great benefits, and I've been able to benefit by having been able to interview Mike at all of these times when he had the public's attention, and not only was it, you know, in this country, but it was worldwide, and you know, his greatness. All of us at Showtime, all of us in boxing, he elevated all of that. So I've always been grateful to Mike, and so you know.
What was that Savarese fight like? You know, what was the excitement like? You know, I couldn't imagine. Was it like crazy? Like the big, I beat up Frank Warren, is skeptical. Am I going to go to prison after the fight? What's going to happen? And then the fight's over quick, and what the hell are you thinking? What do you guys think? The fight is fucking over.
I'm gonna put that story if I ever write my book. I'm gonna put that story in the book. I'm not gonna put it on this podcast.
Oh, God.
I'm gonna put that story in the book. But
shit!
But I mean, let me tell you something. If I really, you know, if I really sat here and thought about it, you could do a book on Mike of everything, and he's done his story.
Yeah,
he's done Undisputed, and let me tell you something. He's left a lot of shit out of this.
Yeah, there's volumes.
A lot of material here.
Volumes.
And I don't know if it's because it didn't rank on top or if it's because he didn't want that exposed or if he's saving it all for the next chapter and the next chapter and the next chapter. But let me tell you something. Every time you said, I can't believe what I just saw or I can't believe that we just experienced it, something else happened. And here we go again.
Fuck. What was it like being on a plane? That wasn't what's going to happen next, right? What's going to happen at this fight?
You never knew. You never knew, and you still don't know. I mean, you still don't, you know. It's a journey.
Yeah,
it is. And it's, you know.
What am I doing with some podcast? What am I doing with a podcast? I thought all this stuff was for weirdos at first. Yeah. Everybody was a podcast and on their phones and stuff and on YouTube.
Are you on your phone all the time? Are you one of these
guys? No. The only person I call is my kids and my wife.
You're not looking at this thing doing all day.
Okay. They don't have me. This company has me now.
Really? So you don't get on the telephone?
No.
No.
I don't leave anybody. I'm never out of my wife's and children's sight for more than a couple of hours.
How have you figured out how not to be addicted to the phone like everybody else?
Everybody I want is hands distance. You know, my children, my wife, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my friends, I come to work with them. We're all in distance. I don't know. Everything I want is relatively close.
And let's go back to the people who you began your life with. Are any of them in your life?
No. I don't know what they're doing in their life or nothing.
You don't ever see them?
Like, you know, so I'm Rory and John Horn, never.
I don't mean them. Teddy.
No.
Kevin.
No.
Any of Cuss's people?
Yeah, Tom Patty.
Tom Patty, okay. Yeah. And how about the Jacobs family or the Caton family?
I don't even see those guys. Never saw those guys.
Don King's family.
No.
Don.
I called Don the other day just to say I apologize.
You did?
Wow. Yeah.
What'd he say?
Don's a good man, but Don just don't get it, you know? I don't know. Don probably thought I was trying to set him up on the phone or something. I don't know. He's very protective.
He was skeptical.
He was very skeptical. He wasn't. He, you know. And at the end, I thought he may believe that I was being sincere. He said, "Hey, you're really a good person." You know. I said, "Well, thank you." You know, thank. That's but he nice. Was very.
But that was good. You called.
Yeah, but
what
he
caused
very,
that?
It was very protective, huh?
What caused that?
I don't know, because I had a really nasty feeling in my body for throwing that water in his face the last time I saw him.
That was the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I feel so sickening about that, because I was watching YouTube, and YouTube showed me throw the water, and I said, wow, and I didn't feel good about that. I didn't like the way that picture looked, so I called and apologized and stuff.
Mm. Well, maybe
that's awesome, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I shouldn't be doing no shit like that. I've been to too much bullshit in my life to be throwing water in people's face. Like, I'm a tough guy. All that tough guy stuff got me in so much trouble. Oh, remember when I used to think I was a tough guy and it got me in all that trouble? Oh, man. Oh,
Jim.
God.
Jim, what was it like getting in the ring after this guy fought to interview him?
I don't know what the hell I'm going to say.
He's like breathing fire, dude. He's like an unchained tiger.
Well, you know, I'm going to say, you know, it's funny. You didn't know what he was going to say, but he always was respectful to me, and he was of the position. So, you know, he never got nasty with me. He never got angry with me. One time he threatened to kill me.
I did. I'm sorry.
He threatened to kill me and Don King. He threatened to kill me and Don King. And he said, I'll kill you and I'll kill Don King. He was mad at Don. And he said, and I kind of looked at him. And 45 seconds later, he kissed me on my cheek.
Oh, my God.
And it was far more disturbing that he kissed me than it was that he threatened to kill me. So, I mean, other than that one 45-second thing, he was on time. Courteous to me and the people at Showtime. Even in his craziest moments, he never lashed out at any of us that I can remember.
But then I wanted to I wanted to kill you and Don King.
I think you just said it because it was an easy way to get to Don.
Oh.
I'll kill you and Don. Don was standing behind us.
Oh, no.
Why did you? I don't know why you said it. What were you mad at him about?
Oh, no.
Was that after you'd thrown him out of the car or kicked him out of the car or whatever?
I have no idea, man. I have no idea.
Do you remember all this stuff?
I remember a few things, yeah, a few things. I remember being in Miami and we're driving down, what is that, the 10 in Miami? What is that in Miami?
I don't know Miami. I don't.
The 20 to 10, I don't know, something. Then,
it's that freeway that's always busy.
Yes.
Yeah, and so before the turnpike.
We're driving on the turnpike, and next thing you know, I just freak out and I kick the guy. And as soon as I kicked him in the back of his head, he puts on the brake, and we stop in the middle of the street, and I'm beating him in the car. I'm
trying
to get, yeah, I'm trying to get I'm trying to get the girl in the front seat, who's a friend of mine, to hold him so I can get in the front seat with him, because I want to get him in the front seat where he can't run. Like, I'm in the back, and I can't get him the way I want to, because I'm in back of him, and I'm in the car. So I wanted to get out, and so I told her to hold him. So as soon as I let him go, he got the car, right? He got out the car, so I tried to run. Oh, man. Gosh.
This was on the highway.
Yeah.
And you just left him on the highway.
No. He ran a car, so I tried to run the car, so he did another back turn and got back in the front and drove off and left me on the highway.
Oh, he left you.
He left me on the highway, yeah. Oh, but no. Check this out, all right? I'm on the highway, right? I'm on the highway, so when he gets down there, he's real far, so he lets the people who I was with, my girlfriend and my other friend, he lets them out the car, and they're walking up the highway while cars are coming down, and they're walking up the highway while they come to get me. And so one of his security guys in the Rolls Royce, he comes, he thinks that we're stuck on the road, so he pulls over, and I'm mad because he's throwing security. I give him a shot. Bow! Out cold, right in the middle of the street. In the highway. It's out cold. Cars are coming. The police car comes. A police car's on the car's out. The guy's shoes are in. The cop picks up me. I have cocaine. I have marijuana. I have it in a box that my girlfriend is holding, right? The guy gets us in. The cop puts us in the car. Me, Jackie, Luz, and myself. He puts us in the car, drives us to a hotel, and says, "Are you okay, Mr. Tyson? Thank you very much, officer." And leaves us up there. I have cocaine in a box. I have marijuana in a box. A big box like this. Ooh, a fucking brick of cocaine. I got fucking marijuana, everything in there. And
are you okay, Mr. Tyson?
Yes, he took me right to my hotel room and everything. I'm stuck on the highway. I should be in handcuffs. I'm on the highway. Somebody's out cold. On the highway, he should put me in handcuffs. We should be in the cop car and we should be gone. But the guy put us in the car, took us to our hotel. And
then he asked you why you was out there.
Excuse me.
He didn't ask you why.
He didn't ask me shit. I was so my heart was beeping. The girl's heart would be. I'm ready. I'm thinking he's taking us to the police station. He took us right to our hotel.
Wow,
that's amazing.
Took us right to our hotel. I couldn't even believe it. I can't even believe it. He didn't say a word. He drove us, and we're holding the drugs in the box and
stuff.
He
was so stoked.
And he just took us, and he's literally like, "Okay, Mr. Tyson, yes, sir. Thank you, officer."
Were you the heavyweight champion at the time?
No, it was my last fight. I didn't have no money. I was broke. I was destitute. Don, did what he ever did to me, and I was. I don't even know what I was doing out there.
Now, let me ask you a question.
What?
I want to ask you a question. What did you do with all that money?
Hey, I just gave a lot of it away. I had a lot of fun. And fuck, I just did what I wanted to do. I had a lot of fun. I had so many awesome women and stuff. When I was a kid, I just had a really good time. I was all over the world. I was in San Tropez with awesome people. It was almost so bad. It felt so good. It felt wrong. You know, it just felt wrong. It just felt wrong to have all this ecstasy, have all this sensation, have all this fun, and all this wealth. It just didn't feel, it felt wrong, but it was awesome.
Do you miss it?
No. It's going to happen again, but not the way it happened last time, you know?
So I always was amazed. I guess you're supposed to ask the question, but I always was amazed that you haven't had regret for that portion.
No,
you may have regret in other things that you've done and feel bad and apologized or whatever, but for the way you lived your life with that money.
No, I don't have no regrets, but maybe some, but no. As I got older, I say no, because when I was young, I said maybe I should have regrets, you know? But I should have regrets because my life should be different than it is now. But it's the way it's supposed to be now, because it's prepared for grander things. Now that I'm in the stage of being able to understand them and handle them. Before, I'm surprised that I'm not dead for the way I lived my life. You know what I mean? I'm surprised at how disrespectful I was, you know, during that time, thinking that I was God. You know what I mean? I had some tough friends, so if you don't agree with me, you're going to be in some trouble. You won't go out with me, all right? Your boyfriend's in trouble now. Just, you know what I mean?
It's interesting because I've heard you say that, Mike, and then, you know, Jim talks about how respectful you were to have been to him and to his father, and I've heard that all the time. And yeah, I listen, see you act, and you have a ton of respect.
That's awesome, and humility, too. You know, I learned that from Cuss, too, but this is how it was going to be. I'm going to kiss the ring. That's right. You're the man. I'm going to kiss the ring. But the people below me, they're going to kiss my ring, too.
That's the old mic right there. You got that. Here we go. There's hear that emotion. Fire.
No, but it's not. It's not about that.
Yeah, totally. That was makes sense.
It was never about that. But that's the way I was raised. You know, you kiss the ring, but they're gonna kiss yours too one day. You know, but that was all ridiculous. When I took the toll, what I realized and understood about the toll, we all bowing down to God. We're all the strongest, the most powerful, the richest. The weakest, we're all going to bow down to God. Or something bigger than us.
A higher power.
Why do you have a tattoo of Days of Grace and Arthur Ashe and Chairman Mao?
I'm just very fascinated with both of them. I thought they were awesome individuals and stuff. I really, when I was in prison, I really wanted to, I almost got, it was almost like a hypnotic effect they had on me when I was in prison.
In what way?
On how to better myself and strengthen myself for revenge.
Against
myself.
You wanted revenge against society, you know, and yourself.
Yeah, society that put me in here and lied on me. But it was really a blessing in disguise, you know, because I started to learn who I could really be. Not who I wanted to be, but who I could be at that particular stage of my life.
And what did you learn?
Huh?
What was it that you learned from them?
That I learned that we're all going to make mistakes in life, but when we make those mistakes, we will allow those mistakes to become blueprints to a bigger part of our success in our life and in civilization.
So you were in the right place at the right time for the wrong reason.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I think if I didn't go to prison, I would have AIDS or something.
Want to explain that?
Yeah, these people were really, a lot of my friends were dying. They're getting sick and dying. You know, reckless lifestyle, reckless sexual appetites. And I was on that same wagon with them. So if I didn't get that 3 years, I would have probably been in a lot of trouble.
And jail pulled you out of that?
Yeah, big time. I was absolute slave to sensation when I was a young kid, when I was fighting. Before I went to prison, I was just a slave. If it felt good, I did it. No matter what it was or what it, who it was, if it felt good.
So whether it was sex or drugs or anything. Hitting somebody in the head, whatever made you...
Anything that felt good. Being disrespectful to a woman or anything. If it felt good, I did it.
And how did prison break that? Just the inability to have freedom?
No, I wanted to be in control of myself. I just wanted revenge. I didn't understand. I thought going to prison... I thought I was this dumb motherfucker, Alexander Dumas. Who is this guy? He wrote the book about the guy. Who was the guy that went to prison?
Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, I was reading that. I thought I was that guy. Am I a fucking idiot to believe that this was that kind of harsh punishment? I thought this was the worst thing that could happen to a human being. I only did 3 fucking years of my life, and I had a ball in prison. I had a girlfriend. I got a girl pregnant in prison. I was living a life in prison.
How did you do that?
It was meant to be. I was Mike Tyson. Anybody gave me what I want. And I feel like a dick even talking like I'm some tough guy or some cool guy. I was just a pig.
Who brought you the women?
They worked there. They're my teachers.
How did they allow themselves to get that close in proximity to you?
I don't know. I'm a human being. I'm kind of smart. I read Machiavelli. I'm a little bit of a scumbag, so I look at people for what they are, and sometimes people have problems that they can't solve because they don't have finances. But I'm in prison, but I have money, you know? I'm in prison, but I have a few million bucks, though. I'm not broke, though. You know what I mean? I didn't get broke till I came out of prison again and got broke. I was really broke. So when I'm locked up, I'm not broke. So if they have a problem, well, I can have somebody send that money from outside right to their house. If they need anything, I'll take that. What do you need? You need your house fixed? You need a house, period. Do you need a car? And now the jail situation is awesome now. My life is beautiful.
How many people would you say have that experience in jail? You describe jail as being a good experience.
I don't know. I'm sure. Listen, I didn't want to leave when I left.
Why?
Because I was secure. I was safe.
Safe from yourself? Safe from Society safe from
both. Both.
Society. So was there a judgment? Was there a was it a tough a reacclimation?
Big time. Big time. Big time. Yeah.
It's always fascinating to talk to Mike.
I had so much.
This podcast is going to go everywhere.
I had so much fucking vindictiveness, venom in me. I wanted revenge. I thought somebody
you still have
did something
it. I still
to
hear
me.
I hear the old Mike in
you
here.
You know, but they didn't do anything. I just think that someone did something to me because I thought that shouldn't have happened to me. Even though I took it as experience, the best experience of my life, I still feel like it was somebody did this to me. Instead of looking at this as your best experience to find out more about you, that you're still nothing, that you think you're something. Even at my the worst, the bottom as I can be, you know what I mean? I might see a fucking mirror and say, wow, I'm good looking. I can brush my fucking hair. You know, my ego will always come up some kind of way. Don't care how I try to crush it.
Do you still have those moments of anger?
Not anger, no. But no, when I work out, I'm angry. Yeah, that's true. When I'm working out, I'm fucking fierce. I'm screaming sometimes. Yeah.
What do you attribute that to?
My experience in life, my experience in taking the toll. You know, I might scream out, I'm a fucking God, and then say, excuse me, I'm so sorry I said that, God.
This toad thing needs more examination, but the toad thing didn't come into your life until recently, so
yeah.
The anger's been there all year. How old? 53 years?
Yeah, but it's not towards anybody. There's no physical being that caused my anger.
It's all internal.
All internal, yeah.
And how would you describe yourself, the internal equilibrium of Mike Tyson these days?
I would like forgiveness from Mike Tyson, yeah.
You're trying to forgive yourself?
Yes.
Mike always makes me think.
No, I'm just...
No, I mean, I have to... Let's talk about Flip.
I spoke to somebody about Flip 2 days ago. I spoke to somebody about
Tell
Flip.
Everybody who Flip was.
Flip, listen. Flip was this guy that had... This is really interesting. Flip was this guy that had a lot of influential... pulling all the hotels, and this is the 80s.
Tell
them
what Flip was.
I thought Pimp Flip was a pimp. I didn't know.
Flip was an original pimp.
Was he really?
I guess.
I don't know. But I knew, this is what I found out recently about Flip.
Flip was StubHub long before StubHub.
Listen, this is what I found out recently about
Flip. Flip had 5,000 tickets to everything. This guy.
And he also had women that he gave to some of the guys, the CEOs. I didn't understand that. I found that out recently. He was good with the girls too.
But did Flip have drugs? I don't know that.
I don't know anything about drugs. He seemed like too much of a straight shooter to have drugs, but anything's possible in those days.
He was something.
Wow.
This guy was dressed impeccably. Black guy.
Yeah.
Baby blue one day, royal blue the next day. He had beautiful green hat.
You don't see people like this. They don't make people like this no more. These guys have written out of history, man. You can't believe this.
He was at every fight. Ali's fights.
Yeah, he was at Ali
Fights.
He's always
Ray
asking
Leonard's
if I want
fights.
Tickets to any of the concerts. Right. Big fights. Got him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he had all the Sinatra, Andy Williams. This guy had everything, and he would sit. Where would he sit?
In the goddamn hotel.
With the front bar of Caesars.
Yeah.
Joe Louis used to be the greeter, but everybody came to see Flip.
Really? Everybody Flip knew Joe Louis, too?
Remember Joe Louis used to be standing?
I wasn't around when Joe Louis was the guy.
Oh, Joe used to be in Caesars. And he was a greeter.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was that like seeing him every day? What did your father tell you about him?
It was great because he was an American hero. He was an international treasure. And then you'd see him and he'd be talking to these people. You know, Caesars, you know, the government had taken a lot of his money. He hadn't paid his taxes or they were after him for whatever the reason. And so it was kind of sad that here was this great American hero, and he was shaking hands with everybody in the casino. So it was, but he was pleasant. You know, he was happy with his. You know, he was very nice. I mean, you know, I remember when my dad. I was just a little boy. My dad, and you know, we went back, and you know, it's not like YouTube or anything. If you wanted to find out about somebody, you had to get the encyclopedia, or you had to
go to
get
a
book,
go to the library.
So it wasn't like there was just film sitting around of Joe Louis. You had to go search and seek this stuff out. And so he taught me about him, and, you know, and so it was like you became in awe, and then you'd see him the next time, and you had that history now in your head because you'd been taught about him. and he was great. But I'm telling you, he had a crowd around him. Everybody wanted to say hello to Joe. Everybody wanted to say hello to Joe. But everybody went to Flip to get something done.
Oh, man. Listen, Joe Louis set a new standard, you know, because now people do that for a living. Meet and greet. We do that for a living. You know how much people become millionaires meeting and greeting people that normally would have been bummed, would have been sleeping in their cars, or would have turned into alcoholic.
The memorabilia age now and the autographs, Joe Louis would have been.
Holy moly.
When did he die? I forget when he died. Early 80s?
Listen, no, he died the day Larry Holmes fought.
Cooney?
Trevor Burbick, 81, 82.
Yeah, that's what I said, early 80s, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, but this guy was something. But when did Flip die?
He had to die in the late 80s and 90s.
Wait, he wasn't around 90s. For the Tyson Holyfield?
I don't think he was around for that stuff.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, when the fights left Caesars, you didn't see him much anymore.
So, we had fun back then, Jim. There was a lot of stuff. What were you guys doing when you guys were all on the plane, all the reporters on the plane together? Well,
I used to go to fights early, and you know who else used to come early?
Who?
And he was at all your fights, too.
Who's that?
John Madden used to come in on the bus. And we would sit. Remember that?
Did he really?
Oh, yeah, at Caesars. John would come on Tuesdays. And John used to have all of the closed circuit fights for the Oakland area. He was like the distributor. So he would get all the fights to deliver to the fans. And John loved boxing. I mean, John's a huge. He still watches the fights to this day. He still texts me and talk to me about
it.
Anyway,
hi, man.
John, you remember there used to be that little elevator and that glass thing that went up at Caesars right before you went out of the pool? I forget what the name of that.
I don't remember.
Yeah, you go out to the pool and there was this little bench right there. And Madden used to sit there on that bench. And he'd come in on Tuesday and Gil Clancy would come by and Tim Ryan would come by and Dick Young and
Young was the man.
All these writers would come, you know, come by and sit down and talk to Madden, and he would just kind of hold court there, and he would sit and, you know, he was a Super Bowl winning coach, and he was in his, you know, beginning of his broadcasting career, and they would send him, like, for CBS Sports Spectacular to interview the fighters before the fights. So, you know, he would have Ray Leonard on, or he would have Hagler on, or Hearns, or Duran, or whoever it was, Whitaker, you know, any of those guys, Arguello, all those old guys that used to fight, you know, on CBS. And or before their closed circuit fights. So I used to sit there with John all week because we'd be the only people that would get there on Tuesday. You know, I'd get there early to do, you know, because Top Rank had hired me. Bob Arum had hired me to do, you know, all of his satellite interviews. And then Don hired me to do all that, all these interviews. So I would hang out with John Madden. He became a dear, dear friend. And I love John. And John was brilliant, is brilliant. He's a genius. He was a genius about people, a genius about real estate, a genius about football, and he became the most popular figure in the history of professional football. You know, Madden, the game Madden now today
crazy.
Is, you know, it's not only did he win more games, he won more games to 100. He was the youngest coach to win 100 games first, then he won a Super Bowl. With the Raiders, and then he, you know, had this incredible broadcasting career. He won like 25 or 30 Emmys, the best broadcaster forever. I mean,
yeah,
and then
John
he created
awesome.
Madden game. So, but he loved boxing, and we used to talk about you all the time.
Really?
Oh my God!
Honestly, is Mike Tyson crazy? What do you think, Mike nuts?
No, John had respect. John had deep respect for athletic ability.
Really?
Oh my God! And he was enamored by it. He was. He thought that the guys that put in the work that rose to the top step of the victory platform were guys who earned their way, that you couldn't bullshit that. You know, you could bullshit in life, and you could make a team, and you could get on television and not know your stuff. And Madden would always say, that guy's a bullshit. But then when champions and true great players and great athletes— He was really had tremendous admiration and respect. And John's still doing good. John's up in Oakland, Pleasanton.
Nice.
Coach Madden, yeah. He retired, and he's one of the only two people I know in my life that walked away when he was on top in television. Only two people quit television. Otherwise, television quits you. Yeah. Johnny Carson and John Madden left while they still had a lot left in them. Hmm. Surprised you never met Coach Madden.
I did an interview with him a couple of times. I remember seeing the interview I did with him.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, yeah, you know.
Jim, were you, was your line through journalism? Were you really, did you as a kid, you wanted to follow that? Were you interested in being a sports writer? Like, how did you come?
Yeah, how
did
you get involved
with
this stuff?
How did you get to this point?
I love sports, and I was a tennis player, and played tennis in high school, and we were city champions and so forth in Denver growing up. And I loved sports and playing sports and watching sports. And so when I was a freshman, summer freshman college going to I went down to the ABC station in Denver and asked for an internship or a job, and they didn't have anything. And they said, if you get into school, college, you'll get come back and try for an internship. So I went to college, and the first day I was on campus, I saw the man who I interviewed with. He said, go over to the journalism school and try and get an internship. So I got an internship. I was there for a month or two, and they were converting from film to videotape. So all the guys who were in the union for the film took the buyout. So they hired me, and I got hired as a videotape editor. Nobody knew how to videotape editor, so I was 17 or 18 years old, so they were teaching that's good. So they paid me a lot of money. Paid me like $25,000 when I was 17 years old.
That's crazy.
And yeah. I thought that was more money than I'd ever have. So I was able to buy my car. It was a Toyota Corolla, and that cost like $1,700. And then I bought beer for everybody, in the dorm. I'd get a cake for them every week. And I still had $22,000 after that, So anyway, one day I was in my edit booth. I was editing. Red Miller was the head coach of the Denver Broncos. I was editing the Red Miller show at 7:30 in the morning. And the lady who was the head of the bureau for assignments came running, and she says, "You know something about sports, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, a little bit." She said, "Muhammad Ali's at the airport. He took an earlier plane. He's 2.5 hours early. Go out and interview him." Because back then, there were no cell phones. There were no beepers. There were no computers. If you did not answer your home telephone, they couldn't find you.
Right.
So they couldn't find the anchor man. They couldn't find the lead sports guy. They couldn't find any of the reporters. They couldn't get any. Nobody's answering their phone. They were sleeping. They were in the shower. They were breakfast. No, God knows where they were.
No pages back then.
Nothing. So I ran into the weatherman's office, took his coat and tie. Didn't fit. It was a little itty-bitty guy named Stormy, and the sport coat came up to here. So I took it off, but I took his shirt in his tie, and I went out and interviewed Ali.
Oh, my God.
Ali was coming to town. He was going to talk. He was talking about his fight with Spinks was coming up, and then he was going to fight a guy named Lyle Alzado, who was a Denver Bronco.
Yes.
In an exhibition after the Spinks fight.
That's right.
So I interviewed him. He gave me 45 minutes. He was great at the airport. He was just wonderful. He was patient. He was nice. He was funny. He was thoughtful. He was all those things. He called me the local young Howard Cosell. So anyway, so I took the interview back and was going to edit myself out of, they weren't going to put me on the air. I wasn't on the air. So the head of the bureau came in there, the news director, a guy named Roger Ogden. And he looked at this. And I don't think this guy even knew my name. He didn't even know my name. He said, you interviewed Ali today? I said, yeah. He said, let me see it. Showed him all 45 minutes. He said, let me see that again. So he spent an hour and a half with me, and he looked at me, and he said, we're going to put you and this on the air. It's barely adequate. So I tell everybody I've been barely adequate ever since. So ABC saw, the people there at the station saw that Ali took a liking to me for whatever the reason. So they then sent me to all of his fights to do an interview. Well, then Bob Arum saw that.
Wow.
And he hired me. Don King saw that, and he hired me. So I worked for Top Rank and for King Vision, Top Rank first, doing all these interviews before the fights with all the fighters, and then after the fights. And then they would put them up, on these satellites in the early advent of satellites, and everybody would take them down and use these interviews, and it would help them, promote the early days of pay-per-view was closed circuit in the theaters, or, you'd have to go someplace to watch the fight. And then you'd pay like $20 to get into the fight. You weren't born when there was closed circuit. Well,
I just started. When you had closed circuit started? 78?
No, I'd say early 70s.
Yeah.
So like 70, or probably the first Ali Frazier fight, 71.
Yeah, 71 probably.
Yeah. So And then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they were figuring out how to deliver it to the homes, you know, the theaters and all this. So anyway, Bob Arum hired me and was great to me. And then Don hired me. And so that's how I really, you know, became a sportscaster. And there was no grand scheme or plan or thought. It just happened by happenstance that Ali came early, and Ali was great to me. And that was my first interview, and Ali, you know, was honored me. All those years later, he let me do his last interview on television in 2000. And we took America's Greatest Living Olympians. So we took Muhammad Ali, Ray Leonard, Mary Lou Retton, and Carl Lewis. Carl Lewis, the most decorated track and field. Mary Lou Retton, who would revolutionize gymnastics in this country with the 84 Olympics. Ray Leonard, who was an icon, and then the greatest Ali. And we went up to the Stanford Pool in Palo Alto 2 nights before Michael Phelps left for the Greek Olympics in 2004. That was before he ever won a medal. And we bet that he would be the greatest swimmer of all time, that he would break Mark Spitz's record.
Have you ever met Mark Spitz?
Yeah.
What was the deal with him? Tell me about his personality. What's the story?
Let me just finish this. So anyway, that's that show, at the end of that show, Ali's last words on television in that interview, we had a torch sent to us from the Athens Olympic Organizing Committee.
That's the one he had?
Yep, and Ali handed that torch and he said, "I'm the greatest, you're the latest, it's now up to you." And he handed that torch to Michael Phelps. And now Michael Phelps, all these years later, the most decorated gold medalist in the history of the Olympics, I think it's 18 gold medals, 22 medals overall. And now that show, when you look at that show, you know, I don't think anything like that could ever happen again. The greatest athlete ever, our greatest, Ali, the greatest Olympian ever in Phelps. And Carl Lewis, to this day, still the most decorated track and field athlete with 9 gold medals. All those broad jumping over 4 Olympics, you know, starting in Los Angeles, going to Seoul, Barcelona, and Atlanta. So, and Mary Lou Retton, you know, kind of made popular after Olga Korbut and Nadia Comaneci, you know, made gymnastics popular in women's sports. You know, you can kind of trace to her making it a catapult. So that was proud of that show. What was the question?
I was talking to you about Mark Spitz. I always heard rumors about him. He was a nice guy and this and that. And
he was nice to me. Yeah. He was nice to me, but he turned down doing that show. He did not want to do that show because he thought it would hurt him commercially.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, it was the worst decision ever made by any guy that I mean, why would you not want to be on television with Muhammad Ali, Mary Lou Retton, Carl Lewis, and Ray Leonard? And Michael Spitz. I mean, and Michael Phelps. I mean, it never made any sense. He thought it was going to hurt his commerciality. He thought that it would somehow detract from, I don't know, I can't explain it, but I talked to him 30 times about the show. He was always very pleasant, but I could never get him to commit to do it. And eventually he just passed on doing it. And it's kind of sad, but it turns out we didn't need him. You know, better off we didn't have him now that we look back on it.
Did you know Jackie Robinson?
No, sir.
No.
I know his wife.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's still alive?
Yeah.
Wow.
He just had Jackie Robinson Day last week, and she was Rachel Robinson. Oh, Rachel. Yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't know her. But I remember, you know who else used to come into Mateo's?
Who?
Ray Robinson.
Really?
Oh, Sugar Ray Robinson all the time. Oh, yeah. I don't know when he died. He probably died in the
89. I went to his funeral. 89.
Yeah, he used to come in all the time.
Really?
Talk to everybody. And, oh, yeah, he drew a big crowd. Everybody wanted to, you know, they considered him the greatest fighter ever. You know, pound for pound.
Why, listen, how could somebody ego handle that?
How could what?
How could somebody ego handle that? Being called the greatest fighter of all time. You're the favorite greatest fighter I've ever seen. How could they handle that ego? How could he live like that? Wow. That must have been some demons, huh?
You know what, though?
Huh?
Because he had losses.
Yeah.
You know, the ego is with the zero. Okay? So, like look at Floyd. Floyd walks around 50-0.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. So that, when you're never defeated, then, you know, you think you never will be defeated.
You don't know who you are.
Rocky Marciano, I didn't know him, but he had an O after him, too, right?
Yes.
Ray Robinson never had that O. So he knew what it was like to lose. So when he was called the greatest, he could say, well, you know what? That's your assessment, may not be my assessment. Because my assessment is, I know I lost. How many times did he lose?
Oh, he lost around 19 times.
Okay, so he lost a lot.
Out of 202 fights, 100 knockouts.
So he knew what that felt like. So anytime somebody might say to him, you're the greatest, he might say, well, I'm going to accept that and thank you, but I know internally better.
I tell you a story. Can I tell you a story about him?
Yeah, please.
Why somebody, this is just a story. This is just a small part of his career. Why somebody think he might
How
think
long
he's
is this
greatest?
Podcast?
Forever.
We just talk all day? This is a telethon. This isn't a podcast.
Listen, Ray Robinson. Ray Robinson.
Does this get edited?
He was 40-0.
So just keep
and
talking.
And he lost one fight to Sugar Ray, to Jake LaMotta.
Look at Fred laughing. Go ahead.
Having fun.
Go ahead. Start Sugar over.
Ray
I'm sorry.
Sugar Ray Robinson had 40. He was 40-0. And then he lost the fight to Sugar Ray, Jake LaMotta, his first loss. And then went like 79-0 or something without a loss. How do you do something that I don't think you're the great? The guy looked so beautiful when he looked like perfection. He was tough and rugged like a dog, competitive. You have to kill him to beat him. It's just really, it's marvelous entertainer. Just watching them fight was just awesome.
What do you think of this batch of heavyweights?
Hey, I think they have their purpose in their generation. I think they all do. I think since Wilder and Tyson Fury had that fight. Yeah, I think that fight cemented them in a generation of great heavyweights. I really believe that.
Deontay Wilder's a great man.
Yeah, really?
Yep.
I don't know him.
You should. You should.
Yeah?
You should. You should take the time. You should take the effort, and vice versa.
I think now that you said that, I'll look at it from that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's worthy.
Yeah.
He's worthy, and he's got, awesome. You know, he's got a young child who's spinal bifida and so forth, and, you know, he's been a terrific father. And
I think you're right, and I think Anthony Joshua and Lennox Lewis should talk. I think they have some kind of funny, weird beef.
Right, and I don't know Joshua. I've met him a couple times.
It's really bad. I don't like that. I think they should talk. They shouldn't be like that. These two guys, don't. When you mention their name, they're, huh? You know, it's really not good.
And Tyson Fury's an interesting subject, too.
Oh, he's an awesome guy, though.
Yeah, very interesting. Awesome. His background, and he, you know, I don't know how that guy got up. That was like unbelievable. Like, that was like Frankenstein.
It was good stuff, though.
How did this guy get up off the carpet? That was incredible. But anyway,
yeah, I like these guys. You know, at first I didn't, but I started to respect them after the last fight. I said, wow, this was really awesome.
That's good.
Yeah, that's great.
That's good. Boxing needs to have you involved. And
for sure.
You bring out in people memories of that are fond to them. So your involvement should be important to you because it's important to other people. And if you put an arm around some of these fighters and you give them your respect and your time, I think it would really help the game. And really, as opposed to, you know, so much now, everybody looks back at their generation and says, you know what, we were better. And they get resentful of the money that these guys make and the attention they get now. But everything's changed. Social media's changed. Television's changed. The delivery of it's changed. The dollars have changed. You know, it's just crazy. Back in your day, when you were fighting for all that money, people looked at you the same. Ali's generation and all those Shavers and all those other guys looking at you, and I said, well, he couldn't beat me. They maybe didn't say it, but they felt it.
Yeah, they had to feel that,
right? Because you know, but I think we live in a different time now, in a different era, and I just think your participation would mean a lot.
Because you know,
you're the guy they look at. They're looking at you on the video games. They're looking at you on YouTube. They're looking at you, all these knockouts and everything. And in many ways, what they want to be is be you. But they can't be you, but they want to have the ability to have your respect. That they can have. But that's up to you.
That's weird because, you know, when I was a young kid, that's all I wanted to do. I wanted Ali and these guys, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, to know my name.
And respect you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't care. I just wanted them to know my name, to know I trained hard, to know I worked hard. I used to go to their restaurants and wait for them outside the restaurants and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
And did they know your name?
Huh?
Did they?
No, but I used to just watch them. I just stalk them and shit.
Let's take a break.
Yeah, man. Well, we can wrap. That's
yo. Let's wrap good. It. This is just we can wrap it. Talking.
Yeah, man. And Jim, you being such a close friend of Mike, it makes it. You know, you go for hours. So, hey, man, thank you so much
thank
for coming, Jim.
Me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
You're
anytime.
Awesome, man.
Anytime.
Well, Mike, great episode, brother.
Awesome. What you want to do? Take us out, dude.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching another episode of Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. I'm Eben Britton.
I'm Mike Tyson.
I'm Jim Gray.
And Jim Gray, do they need to, if you want anybody to know where to get in touch with you, how to contact you, anything?
Contact Mike.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Check us out.
Through him.
Subscribe on our YouTube channel, Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. Subscribe on iTunes. Check us out, everybody. Thank you.
Out of here.
Peace.
Look at the girl. Did you ever think
now, I'm
going to
tell you something. I'm going to tell you something. You should not have this on a podcast. This is much more valuable than putting this on a podcast. You should have this video and you should make this into something other than that, because what you're exposing here, you haven't exposed. And I don't mean to interrupt your business or anybody's business, but
man,
you. But,
no, absolutely.
But
man.
This is.
That's
this,
the big idea.
No, this is. This. You don't do this here. Package this into a format where you're getting paid, not where you're hoping to get paid. Because what's in your head and what you divulge is captivating. And if you do this right, this story, I know your story. I know your story inside out. Okay? I've lived it. But some of the stuff that you're talking about, and if you went back through it, I could pinpoint all of it where it's new. Don't do this here. Don't give yourself away. Do not put this out on a podcast. This is too valuable. Turn off these cameras.
This episode of Hot Boxing is sponsored by Talkspace. Head over to Talkspace.com or download the app and be sure to use code Tyson to get $100 off your first month. This episode is also sponsored by BetDSI.com. Head over to BetDSI.com and use promo code Tyson101 for 100% bonus match and show your support for our show.